Welcome to the podcast service of the Massachusetts Climate Action Network. Visit us online at massclimateaction.net or friend us on Facebook.
Hi, and welcome to the Climate Minute, your source for insight and perspective on global warming news. My name is Ted McIntyre, and this show is for the week of March 21st, 2017. Today we're joined by our frequent guest, the prolific commentator, Mr. D.R. Tucker. How are you doing, D.R.?
Doing well. How are you doing?
That's good. Yes. Anyway, most people have heard of a pesticide called DDT. It is almost iconic. I mean, even if you... I don't know particularly what DDT stands for, but everyone's heard DDT is bad. Mm-hmm. Other people may have heard of an author named Rachel Carson, who wrote in the mid-60s. And others may have heard of the book that Rachel Carson wrote, which is called, or one of many books, but she wrote a book called Silent Spring, which had an outsized impact in the early 1960s, and at some level awakened an environmental consciousness. And what her book was about, The Silent Spring, was that the DDT pesticide, which was being widely used, somehow got into the food chain for the birds. And the birds were dying because of the use of DDT. And this was quite a shocker in 1962. And for my money, I mean, it's kind of a quaint time where you could worry about the birds in isolation from yourself, right? You didn't see the birds' problem as your own problem, but there you go. Anyway, because Rachel Carson did so much work, it turns out she has an anniversary coming up, and we are pleased to be joined by Ellie Goldberg, who is a master of education and the founder of a website called healthykids.info, which is basically environmental and she's an environmental health advocate for healthy children, safe schools, and sustainable communities. So, Ellie, thank you so much for joining us.
I'm glad to be here.
That's good. So, Ellie, I sort of laid out a rough picture of Rachel Carson, what she did. Tell me, did I get that story right? I mean, why do you think people should know about Rachel Carson, and how did she impact our lives today?
Well, she was about a lot more than just the birds. And I often explain to people why I'm so passionate about Rachel is because when I was a little girl in the 1950s, my family used to vacation on Lake Erie in Canada. I grew up in Detroit. Mm-hmm. And my job as a little kid, 5, 6, 7 years old, was to go down to the shore and bury all the dead fish that had washed up on the beach before everybody else came down to swim.
What a lovely job.
And I knew something was terribly wrong, but I was just a little kid and nobody else seemed to think there was anything to, be upset about. Uh-huh. And I carried that sense of something being not quite right until I was about 13, 14, and Rachel Carson's book, Silent Spring, was published. And it gripped me in a way that helped me connect the dots. Uh-huh. And my sister remembers that I was never the same again. It was something that I've carried with me in all my work in public health, in education, and in environmental health advocacy.
And you must have had quite a so the resonance was what, did you see the fish and the birds is connected somehow?
Oh, well, definitely. I mean, it was something that was a natural, I think, a childhood kind of sense of wonder that mm-hmm. Rachel Carson talks about. Mm-hmm. And so I think the important thing to know about Rachel is that she was basically a marine biologist, a science, a nature writer. And she was born at a time where women didn't have very many options, but she did, thanks to her mother, become encouraged as a writer. And then later when she got to college, she found biology. And then after writing 3 books about the sea, wrote her 4th book, Silent Spring, which was published in 1962. And it did, like you said, generated a worldwide awakening and awareness and a sense of urgency about protecting the environment, which up until that time wasn't doing very well.
Well, tell me, what was the point of the book? What was the take-home lesson from reading the book in 1962 that you got?
Well, I think the main message was that our health is intimately connected to the quality of the environment.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And she explained the concept or introduced the concept of ecology in a way that the popular imagination could understand it, that we are part of a web of life,
mm-hmm.
and we can't disturb or do damage to any part of it without hurting ourselves. And you talked about the birds being affected by the chemicals getting into the food chain, but her point was that the contamination magnifies all the way up until we are also affected,
mm-hmm.
and being poisoned by the contamination of the air, the water, the food. And, you know, that was something that people recognized. I don't think you have to be a scientist to understand the profound importance of that message.
Right.
And so
right.
as a result of that incredible public awakening, there was enormous political capital or public support for the environmental protection regulations or protections, the Environmental mm-hmm. Protection Agency, the Clean Water Act.
Which came around 10 years later, right? So
right.
she writes the book in 62, and that echoes,
right.
You know, and finally in 72, things like the EPA are set up, right?
Right. I mean, there was an enormous campaign to discredit her by the chemical companies.
Oh, what a surprise. I never would have imagined that, right?
And, I mean, even before the book was published, the New Yorker published it in three segments starting in June of 1962. Mm-hmm. And she really had to go into defensive mode right from the beginning. But again, she had a lot of public popular readership. So, and even President Kennedy, read her book and convened a science panel that supported her message and her work. I mean, people don't realize how much confidence and courage it took for her to speak up in her day. So that's why I'm so passionate about reintroducing her to a new generation.
And what was the, I mean, I have not read the book. I have not read many things that I should have. But, I mean, what
it's
was
a
the,
seminal text.
The quality of the writing? I mean, was it the personalization? I mean, how do you, because you wouldn't imagine a story like that would have such gripping impact as it seems to have had, right? I mean,
well,
you read it. What do you think?
I've read everything she's written. She was the poet of language. She had spent her early career working for the Fish and Wildlife Service,
mm-hmm.
where she had written extensively, for them and doing all their scientific reports and papers and informational brochures. And then she began, writing the books about the sea and the beauty of her language and the ways that she could convey the deep knowledge really spoke to people. I mean, she was an award-winning best-selling author before Silent Spring. So I highly recommend the lyrical writing, but as well as the science in her book. And,
right.
you know, if you read it today, it is just as relevant as it was in 1962. And I think that's why I like to honor her memory every year by encouraging municipalities and organizations to observe a Rachel Carson Day on her birthday, May 27th, and she'll be 110 years old today.
So let me just say that again, Chloe. So you're saying that May 27th this coming year, which is now in, well, this is late March, so a couple months from now, it's your 110th anniversary. So
right.
cities and towns, I mean, if someone's listening to this podcast, they could go to their town council and say, hey, we need at least a proclamation or something about Rachel Carson, right? And work towards
right.
some kind of a holiday, right?
Well, it could be, and it's a time when people can suggest to their libraries that they do the exhibits, get together book lists. If you schools can, there are two American Experience biographies. One's showing on PBS this month.
Mm-hmm.
There's another film that came out a few years ago called A Sense of Wonder, which is a video of a play that uses her own words to tell her story. There's another movie that came out a couple years ago called The Power of One Voice. So there's lots of ways people can learn about Rachel, share her story and her message with their communities. I have sample proclamations up on my blog, What Would Rachel Say?
That's a blog, www.whatwouldrachelsay.com?
No, it's just Google What Would Rachel Say.
Oh, okay.
But I think the important thing is that the book becomes a call to action. And I think people need to be able to come together in their community. So if you belong to a book group or a class or an organization, you have plenty of time to read Silent Spring between now and her birthday.
Mm-hmm.
And to begin to look around at your local environment. I mean, Rachel really believed that you protect what you love. And I think that when citizens look around and do like an environmental audit of what they love, where they live, it really does encourage them to get up, you know, show up, stand up, speak up, and then team up with everyone to, work on protection. I mean, she really created a rubric for analyzing the quality of the environment. She was a, someone who I think if you read her words now, they kind of go deep into your soul and make it easier and not to get so depressed about what's going on.
I was going to say, how would you recommend that people, in addition to reading the book, how to internalize and be like Rachel Carson? And you just kind of answered that, right? Look at your own local environment, find out what you love in the place where you are, and take care of that, right?
And to create those partnerships so that you find your kindred spirits. And And as part of Green Newton here in my own community, for many, many years, we've been holding Alternatives to Pesticides Month, and we've partnered with our health department and our library and our conservators, and we've shown, programs. We've invited speakers who are experts in renewable fuels or organic gardening, gas pipeline leaks. We've hosted a number of experts to help people find the information that, again, gives them the confidence that they're on solid ground when they want to speak up and promote the community values that they want to see, for their children.
Wow. So what's the, I guess, in addition to the, the local, recognizing the local that you love, which I think is a great phrase, right? In terms of, I guess one question is, Rachel Carson's message, how does it translate or does it translate to kind of the consciousness of climate issues? Because in many ways, I mean, it probably the whole ecological view of the world, the impact of the pesticides as an example of things, is kind of mirrored in the whole recognition of climate, right? And she got pushed back, and she was not, I mean, do you see any analogies there? Have you thought about that?
Well, I mean, first of all, Rachel wrote about climate change in 1951. She was such a good observer of nature that she noticed that things were changing, that patterns of bird behavior and plant behavior were changing. So she has been right about everything. I mean, she noticed and she warned us. And I think the important thing to get that kind of courage and confidence from her, the principles that she lived by. She talked about environmental health as being a human right and the health security being a priority, public health being a priority. And if people can measure what's going on now against that standard, I think they have a lot of encouragement to get involved. I'm also on the advisory board of Clean Water Action. I've been involved for 25, 30 years.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's really important to stay connected to people that feel the urgency of what's going on now and not to give up. And I think once you have integrated those principles, that if it's up to us to make sure that people understand. She warned about any synthetic chemical not being, good. You know, you don't have to, be a scientist to understand the harm that's done to children. I mean, look at people's families, the asthma, the neurological damage.
Well, look at
the evidence is there.
Right. I mean, that's kind of I'm not sure that when the precautionary principle was first enunciated, as they say, right? But it basically is that if you have some chemical and you can't prove it safe, then the precautionary thing is to not use it until you can prove it safe, right? And here in the U.S., everything is presumed safe until you can prove it's dangerous, which is kind of a backwards way of approaching things.
Well, one of the things that is kind of a difficult situation is that when people are trying to prove safety or not, the world is so contaminated and it's so widespread that it's, I really question that standard. I tell people it's kind of like getting beat up in a dark alley by 10 thugs. You couldn't in a court of law, right, prove that a certain bruise came from a certain a person who assaulted you, but you don't feel very good. So I think the wiser course of action is to, keep it simple. Don't believe, empty promises or false claims of safety, whether it's, a synthetic turf field that's trying to put into your kid's soccer field or, the perfumes and fragrances and in personal care products. Rachel wrote at a time when better living through chemistry was what everybody was excited about. And, people didn't understand basic biology. And I think if you read Silent Spring, you get such a clear understanding of the processes of nature and the principles of ecology that, it makes such deep sense that it gives you that courage. I encourage people, to do things like raising money or fundraisers for organizations like Silent Spring Institute, which does research into the environmental sources of breast cancer and other cancers, to raise money for climate change organizations, Toxics Action, Clean Water. These are the people that are doing the heavy lifting and that you can trust as trusted resources of good information.
Wow.
Whether it's flame retardants or,
Well,
it's an important thing to be engaged and to feel good about it and to really work with people whose integrity that you trust.
Well, those are good words, Ellie. I think that we have to tell our listening audience that what we'll do is put up links to much of the stuff that we talked about today, certainly to Rachel Carson and places, Ellie's website. That'll be on the blog. It's at www.massclimateaction.org/blog, which is where you find this podcast. You can also find the podcast on our Facebook page. It's at /massclimateaction. So please share us so that other people can find out about the podcast. You can listen to the podcast, of course, directly on your smartphone using Stitcher or TuneIn Radio or Overcast or Podbean or SoundCloud or any one of a number of other podcast directories. And, of course, you can find us on iTunes. So we will close the way we always close, by saying that because we recognize the necessity of personal accountability for our actions, because we accept responsibility for building a durable future, because we believe it's our patriotic duty as citizens to speak out, we must insist that the reckless policies of the new administration not be accepted as normal, and that the United States put a long-term and equitable price on carbon. So, Ellie, thank you so much for coming in. It was very interesting discussing Rachel Carson.
I had a lot of fun. Thank you.
And, DR, as always, you take care of yourself over the St. Patrick's Day weekend.
Thanks.
Okay. Talk to everyone. Thanks to everyone for listening in. We'll talk again soon. Bye-bye.
Thanks for being with us. And until next time, be green.
Very cool.